Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Deitch. My producer is Patrick Antonetti. One guest for this episode, but a tremendous one. One of the iconic names in women's basketball in the United States, Sue Bird, who is a four-time WNBA champion, two-time NCAA champion. And she's here for a number of reasons, but primarily as the host of Sue's Places, which is an ESPN Plus production currently in its run now, where Sue travels the country exploring the history and traditions of college basketball. Again, you can check that out on ESPN Plus. I've seen a number of episodes. It's a really, really fun series. Sue Bird and her fiance Megan Rapinoe also recently formed a production company, A Touch More, that will amplify narratives around identity activism, underrepresented communities, including LGBTQ people, people of color, and women. That production company was created in partnership with Together, which is a media and commerce company that Sue co-founded with Alex Morgan, Chloe Kim, and Simone Manuel, which aims to fuse culture, activism, lifestyle, sports for Gen Z and millennial women. So Sue Bird, after one of the great basketball careers of her time, has now headed into the media, and that will be the focus of our conversation, which is an hour. We get to a ton of topics, including Sue's journey into the media, Caitlin Clark, and a whole mess of other things. So Sue Bird, just a terrific conversation coming up on the Sports Media Podcast. All right. As I said at the top, it's going to be a long introduction for Sue Bird because there are a lot of things on the resume. So I'll do my best to make this media-centric. Obviously, when it comes to basketball, four-time WNBA champion, two-time NCAA champion. She's here today as the host of Sue's Places, where she explores the history and traditions of college basketball. You find that on ESPN+. It's an original series produced by Omaha Productions, Peyton Manning, etc., and Words and Pictures. Last week, we just had Kristen Lapis, director, who's a part of Words and Pictures, so two pretty quality places there. There are 10 episodes of Sue's Places. You can find that streaming right now on ESPN+. Also, Sue Bird and her fiance Megan Rapinoe recently formed a new production company, A Touch More, that will amplify narratives around identity activism, underrepresented communities, including LGBTQ people, people of color, and women. And then finally, Sue Bird is part of another media production company, which is called Together. That's a media and commerce company that Sue co-founded with Alex Morgan, Chloe Kim, Simone Manuel. And that is for, or at least has a focus on Gen Z and millennial women and sort of the nexus of culture, activism, lifestyle, and sports. All right, Sue, I'm exhausted. And with that, let us bring in Sue Bird, basketball player, but more than that, media impresario. Welcome, Sue.
Thank you for the intro. How are you doing?
You're welcome. All right, I'm good, Sue. Eventually, I'll get to the fact that I feel I may have been the first person to profile you nationally when you were 20 years old at Sports Illustrated, but we will hold that for a little later on. So I am fascinated by the growing number of athletes, both current and former. I guess you're never really a former athlete, who now own media production companies. You're an example of this. LeBron's an example of this. KD, the Kelseys. I could sort of go on and on. And I think your generation is kind of the first generation of athletes who are owning and creating their own media. So I want to start here. When did you think during your playing career that something like this could even be an option?
God, probably not till it happened in reality. You know, I think, you know, you mentioned LeBron, which is really a great place to start. I think if he isn't the first, he's obviously one of the first and definitely one of the first to do it while still playing, right? To start his own media company, to have that be his microphone, have that be his main platform. I'd venture to say all of us at a certain point realized that there is, of course, a space for traditional media, absolutely. But there was also, especially for, I think, a woman, there was nuance missing, there was storytelling missing. And so when Alex Morgan called me, because that's how Together came about, you know, it was really her idea, she pulled the rest of us in. It really was a no-brainer, because now we saw it with LeBron and what he could do with Uninterrupted. And now we could do it as women focusing on women. And that's really, I think, where Together is different from other media companies that you see, and that we're solely focused, you know, we're by women for women.
For all the things that you're doing now in media, do you look at the like traditional media or legacy media as competitors? Do you look at them as adjacent? As someone who's now, you know, like one of the faces of a media production company, how do you look at the places traditionally who have at, like this one, like yeah. The Athletic where I work? Like how do you look at like the traditional places that have normally asked you for an interview?
Right. No. I think they complement one another. I think it's just different perspectives. You know, generally speaking, quote unquote, traditional media, you know, it's journalists. It's people who have, you know, probably gone to school for this, who have tons of experience, who understand, you know, how to look at a sport or an athlete or a moment and maybe dissect it or maybe have, you know, an interesting way of flipping it. That's why I actually really enjoyed going on Pablo's podcast recently. Maybe it's the right question to ask. There is a place for that, of course. I would never argue the opposite. I think what athletes are able to do with their own production companies or their own platforms, their own shows, is just add a little color to that, right? So maybe traditional media is kind of building the house and the athletes come in and we get to graffiti it and paint it and kind of add this other element that you're just not going to know. It's not a knock. You're just not going to know unless you've done it or unless you've been in the locker room. It doesn't mean you can't have an opinion, but the perspective is different.
Yeah, I like that illustration, actually. That's very visual. And as Sue referenced, Megan Rapinoe and Sue Bird were on Pablo Torre Finds Out. I cannot highly recommend that more. It was about an hour of them. Really, you don't often get that kind of transparency in interviews from athletes as high profile and Sue and Megan. And so I cannot recommend that enough. And Sue, I appreciate just you being as transparent and honest, because it's I think that kind of stuff really travels and makes a difference. The goal of Together or one of the goals of Together is to narrow the coverage gap in sports media. And traditionally, women's sports has received less than 10% of the coverage, depending on where you're. Survey or polling is, maybe it's a little bit better now in 2024, but it's still very, very low. Obviously, given that women represent 40%+ of all athletes, you can see the discrepancy there. So I want to ask you a sort of a big picture question, especially as a very, very prominent female athlete over the last 15 years. When you look at sports media now as it relates to women's sports, what do you see?
I see a lot of gaping holes. I see a lot of, the good news is I see a lot of attempts to, you know, fill those holes or to add coverage. There's definitely movement, right? At the same time, I'm not as hung up on the number itself anymore, right? Like we talk about, I think the number has actually increased, which is wonderful. So it went from 4 or 5% to now we're maybe even in the teens. I think we've even climbed up to like 15% of coverage. So that's wonderful. I'm never going to say no to that. It definitely needs to continue to increase. You know, the biggest thing that has hurt women's sports overall is that coverage, is that we, you know, we have people that want to watch us. They don't know how, or they can't get it, so on and so forth. I'm now kind of, you know, where my focus has now turned is into the actual coverage itself, right? Like, I'd rather have, if I were to explain it, I'd rather have like one story, one doc, one podcast, one this, one that, that really gets the life of a woman's athlete, really gets, you know, what's happening in the world of women's sports versus 30 stories that barely cover it, that don't really know what they're talking about, that clearly haven't done their homework. So that's kind of where I've shifted a little bit, because I just think there's such a nuance there. And if people truly understood it, it would bring even more interest.
That's interesting. You know, I'm someone who's written a lot or, you know, they've sort of finally got there about the women's national championship. And now I'd say the Final Four being on network television. It's finally now on ABC. It took a long, long time. And once it, you know, last year, what did you see? Well, you saw 9.9 million people watching the LSU Iowa final. So that was sort of incredible proof of concept. But you mentioned like sort of gaping holes in terms of coverage. And I'll get back to like, it's kind of interesting that you're now focused on, you know, really like thoughtful kind of work that really showcases this stuff. But in terms of the why, and again, I think you're a pretty unique person to ask this because you obviously played in addition to now you're on the media side. Like, why are there holes? Why have traditional places not thought that if they talked about, let's say, women's basketball the way they would talk about like the Cowboys on a Monday or a Tuesday, there's a thought, right, that they can't get interest. There's a thought that like they're not going to put. They're not going to put certain women's events in like the most watched programming windows. And that's sort of always been the tradition. It is changing, thankfully, but it's nowhere near where it could be. So I don't know. Is it just something as simple as sexism? Is it the finances? Why? So it's a long way of me asking you, why do you think there have been these gaping holes?
I think it's the answer is actually really similar to, you know, a lot of ways in which marginalized groups have been held back, like in our society. It's all the things, it's all the isms. It's all the decision makers who have been able to just kind of push women's sports to the side. I think the more that I'm learning about the other side of things, you know, I'm actually a part of a firm called Deep Blue now, which is in the media buying space. It's going to focus on women's sports. The more I'm learning about how these systems have been built, the more I realize it actually has been really validating. I have felt these things both as a player. I mean, I've only been a retired player for a year and a half, so it's less in that way. But as a player, it always felt like, it just always felt like something wasn't adding up, right? Like you bring up the Final Four. I'm like, wait a minute. There's, you know, in my experience, we had 30,000 people my senior year watching, yet people tell me they don't care. Right. Or, you know, same thing in the WNBA. I go to games and there's 10, 15, 20,000, especially in if you're in the finals. And again, people are telling us nobody cares, nobody watches. And the numbers continue to rise and we're still told that. So what I'm really starting to understand is when it comes to selling, right? A good example of this is the way that women's basketball, particularly the NCAA tournament, has been bundled in ways. Nobody has ever been incentivized to push for us. I think on the sales side of things, I think when it comes to speaking about it, it was never, you know, and I'm talking about media, going on shows and talking about women's sports and carving out time. You were never, you know, up until the last couple of years, nobody was really held accountable. So you didn't have to change that. It wasn't that people wanted it. I think we as a culture and in sports fall in love with reach as opposed to engagement, right? Like male sports has a much larger reach. No one's going to argue that. But women's sports and their fan base, the engagement there, particularly when it comes to brand loyalty. I mean, again, things I'm learning. Like the brand loyalty on the women's side is amazing. I mean, fans really rock with us. If we go out there and we're like, put some Nike shoes on, like they're going to do it. And I just think the value system has really been skewed towards men's sports. And that's why they've been able to succeed. And I think a lot of times people get it twisted. I'm going on a little bit of a tangent here, but get it twisted that we're asking for equal money. No, we're just asking for an equitable opportunity, right? Like, let's change these systems. Let's see what happens. Put us on ABC. Oh, 9.9 viewers. And that's kind of my short answer to a hard question.
No, that's, I appreciate it. That's interesting. And I happen to agree with you on that. This is sort of an adjacent point, but as someone who has watched your professional evolution, again, just like there's no way the listeners would know this, but so when I worked at Sports Illustrated, I profiled Sue when she was 20. I went up to stores, spent, I think, 2 days up there sort of trying to sort of, you know, unlock like what made this 20-year-old athlete so like possessed by winning. I don't know if you remember that, Sue. I'm sure this was the highlight of your career.
No, of course I remember. Yeah.
So it gets now to, so I have been, it's been really interesting to then sort of watch you find your voice over the last 20 years where once upon a time, I think certainly in your mid to late 20s, you would not have been public about what you were public. Trust me, I'm getting to something here. You would not have been public about calling out from your perspective, sort of Kenny Smith's commentary at the All-Star game. I think you might have felt like this is ridiculous. I don't think you would have become made as public. And then you publicly basically said, and this is not to knock Kenny Smith like specifically, but it's a larger point. Your thought here was that we could really use a woman on the headsets during the Sabrina Ionescu Steph Curry shooting contest because it would have given a different perspective than what Kenny Smith brought up, which is his sort of saying Sabrina should have shot from the where the women shoot their threes in the WNBA. And I just thought that was interesting because like one that not only did I agree with you, but two, it was kind of like, I don't, am I correct? Like you would, this is not something you would have voiced 15 years ago, but now you're like, you know what I'm saying? I feel like you're emboldened to be like, well, if I'm not going to say something, who's going to say something?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think there's a variety of reasons that plays into that. Like my own personal growth. I think, you know, my experience, all of that coming together, the you know, living the life of a woman's athlete in this country, then seeing things change and understanding, you know, like you've said, not just myself, but there's a lot of us who are kind of uniquely positioned to talk about these things. And what it ultimately comes down to for me is I really mean this. I don't have regret that I didn't start saying things sooner or using my voice sooner. I just know now if I didn't, in 5 to 10 years, I would look back and regret it. I can feel that. So, you know, I try to be as understanding and empathetic of other people's viewpoints. I try to then add my viewpoint. And I think that's really where that tweet came from. I think a woman on that call would have changed things. You know, obviously the easy selection would have been Candace Parker. And I think that it would have added another element where you wouldn't have just heard Kenny and Reggie speaking. It would have had a woman's voice because that perspective, that experience would have been really important in that moment. You know, I actually listened to Kenny kind of talk about where he was coming from. And I do hear what he's saying. I try to take in all perspectives. And I do hear his point in that he was trying to advocate that this is where she practices from. But the part he's missing is, yes, I would love to have that conversation, right? But we don't live in that little vacuum. We live in this larger world where if Sabrina had shot from the WNBA line, whether she won, lost, but especially if she had won, everybody would have discredited it.
Exactly. That's the issue.
Yeah, that's the issue. And so to not bring that in, either Kenny doesn't see it, which you know, I mean, I'm down to have a conversation. Let's do it. You know, either Kenny didn't like take that in. I don't think he had like ill intent in what he was saying. Again, it took him coming back and kind of, you know, revisiting it for me to see it. But that's just a perspective that I think somebody, a woman, and then somebody like a Candace Parker would have been able to bring in to that conversation in that moment. And that moment was big. I mean, viewership did peak for a reason. And so we were just missing that voice in that moment.
Yeah, that is a phenomenal explanation, and I think you nailed it. The fact is, Sabrina, to me, actually sort of understood the larger context at hand and had to shoot from where Steph did. Because if she doesn't...
Oh, 100%.
You know what I'm saying? If she doesn't, you have nailed it.
Yeah, no, 100% Sabrina nailed it. And that's where I think she's not currently... There's some people... But I think overall, she's not getting enough credit for what she actually did. Some people have highlighted it. I thought JJ Redick talked about it wonderfully. Steph definitely sees it. But that's where I give a ton of credit to Sabrina.
You know what always is funny to me about these moments? You know who the biggest complainer of using a different ball is? Dudes. I've never, let me just put it this way. If Sabrina walked into a gym and a bunch of guys were playing pickup and they were using a guy's ball, she would just walk right in and play. All of us. We walk right in, we play. And I would argue sometimes I shoot better. Sometimes I shoot better with a guy's ball. When you have a bunch of women playing pickup and one guy walks in and he takes his first shot and it misses, oh, the ball, oh, you know, it slipped, oh, this and that. So it's just, it's always kind of funny. I just wanted to kind of throw that into the mix. Because even if Sabrina had used a guy's ball, a woman's ball, like everyone's going to have a complaint because, again, you know, as I just said, now I'm getting redundant. It's this larger point that is looming when these conversations happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, you nailed it. And that's what I thought of, was that, like, had she shot closer, that literally becomes the dominant narrative and you're gunning back into these old sort of ridiculous stereotypes. So I appreciate, especially like a, you know, a Hall of Famer saying that. One last one on this, and then I'm going to get, then we'll go into Sue's places. The television ratings don't lie. And on Saturday night, the Steph Sabrina thing was the most watched, you know, it peaked as the highest essential skills competition part of this. Would you expect some kind of more integration of the WNBA players at the NBA All-Star game? This seems to me to be a no-brainer. I don't know how Adam Silver feels about it, but you would think logically, not only does it sort of make sense story-wise, but it makes sense like viewership-wise now.
Yeah, I'm actually a little torn on this. There's a woman who used to work for the Seattle Storm. Her name's Roberta, and she did a series of tweets that kind of resonated, and it was kind of it was circling around, did the WNBA actually help the NBA? Right? Like, did the WNBA help the NBA in this scenario? And and I can actually send it to you after this. I'd have to go look it up. And it just was an interesting point. And it was just like, okay, because I think the argument was, in a lot of ways, WNBA viewership, both regular season, playoffs, on the rise. Obviously, college basketball's on the rise, always. WNBA All-Star, I believe, last year hit some numbers that both indicate it's on the rise and maybe even set records. Don't quote me on that part. And so the argument was like, the WNBA like is a draw. And we actually made Saturday night better for the NBA. So does the NBA need the WNBA or vice versa? That's kind of, it was just an interesting point. It's gotten me noodling a little bit. And I've been trying to, think. So I'm a little torn. And then of course, no matter what, you know, if someone like a Sabrina, you know, does something like this again, you're always just opening yourself up. And if these other to all kinds of criticism or, you know, talking heads saying their piece, and unless you're having the nuanced conversation, does it continue to be worth it? These are just things I'm actually thinking about right now. So I don't have a definitive answer for you.
I got you. Yeah, the way I look at it is the NBA All-Star game is a basketball celebration, like that, or it should be. And I think the more you can brought in that tent with great basketball people, I think it becomes a better event. I do understand sort of the thought on that. And I'm not saying like, oh, get the WNBA in there so like you can promote the WNBA in that. I just think that you always want to take advantage of when basketball is being thought of by the larger culture.
Right.
And so that's why I would increase that. I don't have the answer. Like, you know, should you make it three WNBA shooters and three NBA shooters? Like, I don't know what the what is, but I would consider that mostly because I think you, as basketball people, you have to take advantage of these events because it's hard. It's hard on the calendar. It's hard to compete with the NFL. It's hard to compete with college football. And so that's sort of how I would look.
Yeah, no, that's a great point.
That's very rare that anybody says I have a great point on this podcast, Sue. So thank you.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Let's get into Sue's Places. What is the origin story of this series? When did this sort of thought from either from you or from someone else contacting you begin to get us to where we are today?
Sure. It actually came to be like 2+ years ago. I was still playing, and Peyton's Places, Omaha Productions, came to me and asked if I'd be interested in the opportunity. And I 100% was. I remember when Peyton's Places first came out, I remember checking it out through the years. And I actually do have a memory of even back then thinking like, I think that'd be something I could do. I think that'd be something I enjoy. So the fact that they reached out to me years later, there was zero question in my mind. I said yes, essentially immediately.
I have seen at least over the last 24 hours, 3 episodes. One, when you went to Iowa to talk with Caitlin Clark, and I have some Caitlin Clark questions at the end of this that I want to get to.
Okay.
You went to NC State where you found the origins of the net cutting. Which is very famous from Jim Valvano. You talked to Derek Wittenberg, right? I think I have my memory right there. Don Staley was part of that. And this has not aired yet. This will air after you listen to this podcast with Sue. Sue went to St. Joe's, where she became the Hawk, arguably the most famous college basketball mascot. And she performs as the Hawk, which is kind of incredible. It's that to me is a great episode worth doing. So you there's a lot of, like, you're traveling across the country. It's a very, very fun series. But, you know, the reality is, like, you could do 20 years of college basketball sort of stories and travelogue, and you wouldn't run out of stuff. So how much of a say do you have in terms of what is being chosen, and how do you sort of storyboard it? Like, okay, for these 10 episodes, here's what I want to do.
Yeah, it was a really collaborative process. I think, you know, everyone involved, you know, we've already mentioned Omaha, Words and Pictures is also in the mix there. And the way it really started was 15 or so concepts, like potential storylines, were put in front of me. And then from there, I got to comment on them, you know, maybe add an idea or change something, throw another idea in the ring. And then from there, we just kind of whittled. And really, to be honest, interestingly enough, a lot of what dictates what episodes actually get made are talent availability. You know, like, we can't do the net cutting if we can't get people from, you know, the Jim Valvano era. So obviously Derek was able to do it. If we can't get, you know, Don Staley was obviously somebody right away. There were some personalities, if you will, both from, you know, just who they are in the world of sports and also the success they've had, that we wanted to get in regardless. And Don was one of them. But let's say Don's not available, right? Like, how can we maneuver around that? So that kind of dictated a lot. And we were lucky that a lot of people were able to do it. A lot of people were into it. They said yes. And then from there, you know, the creatives on the other side came up with some really hilarious scripts. And I just got to, you know, be myself. It was awesome.
So this is one of the things that I want to talk about, because you are incredibly comfortable, in my opinion, in this series in front of the camera, to the point where, you know, there, without sort of giving away stuff, but, like, you know, Megan is part of this series where, yeah, like, you'll sort of, you know, you'll start like the episode where you're talking to her about like, hey, here's like what my next adventure is going to be. I mean, the acting between you two, Sue, I mean, it's like, you know, it's Meryl Streep-esque. I see Oscars coming. But like the point is like you are one, comfortable in front of the camera, and two, you're willing. This is to me like the thing that is the key to any person who is doing like any kind of thing that you're doing. You're willing to make fun of yourself. You're willing to put yourself in situations and sort of see what happens. So I was sort of, when I'm watching this, I'm thinking about this. And again, I remember you as a young player. You were always someone who always wanted to talk to media. That was never really any issue for you. You were very, what's the word, available. But I do think that like over the course of your career, you became very, very sort of comfortable having a camera in front of you. And I wonder if you could sort of talk about that in terms of like, did it just evolve because you've been interviewed so many times? Did you have to work at it? Like, did you take any kind of, I don't know, drama classes or something like that? But what do you, like, how did it work out for you? Because not every person who's been interviewed as much as you, you know what I'm saying, would want to actually front a series, but you're fronting a series now.
Yeah. I think for me, it's just, it's like the throw to the fire kind of a thing. Like, I was just thrusted into it. I do think I was, you know, I don't even know, like predisposed to being good at it. Like meaning not being good at it in terms of Sue's Places, but you know, as a young kid in front of the media, I was always comfortable enough, right? Like just naturally. And then over time, like I said, you're thrown to the fire. Your cameras are thrown in front of your face. You're asked tough questions. You make mistakes. You learn from them. You know, for me, as it pertains to Peyton's Places and then what is Sue's Places, I've been on commercial sets. I kind of had an idea of like how all this stuff went. But I do have to shout out like very quickly, Jason Sudeikis. The episode we shot with Jason was fairly early in this process. We go down to KU, we have an amazing time watching somebody who is it was like watching a masterclass. That really, I think both for me and Marie, it really opened our eyes to a lot of different just ways and kind of methods. You know, I learned with Jason, like, you just got to go out there and say some stuff. You just keep talking. And if you mess up, that's fine. You keep it moving and don't be afraid. And that's kind of where some of the improv stuff hits, right? Like you might say 30 things. If they can use one, that's great. But if you're too scared to do it, or if you try to follow a script too tight, you're never going to get those moments. So he really, you know, unknowingly, he really helped me a lot kind of come out of my shell.
That's interesting. Who should sort of name who the person, who is your lead producer on this? What's their full name?
Marie Margolis.
She's clearly an excellent producer because this show really, really looks good and it's cut and edited very tight. I would think maybe this is you are a part of this, but I would think it would be the lead producer. One of the reasons why I think the show works is because the people who you have on are very, very comfortable in interacting with you. Like Dawn Staley is willing to go up on a ladder, right, and have a chat with you there. Jameer Nelson is very, very chill, like just sort of hanging out. Even Caitlin Clark, like I felt like at least dropped a little bit. That sounds pejorative. She was at least loose and comfortable talking to you. So when you have these people who you're interacting with, does your producer like talk to them prior to sort of like let them know that, hey, in some ways, this is a bit of a non-scripted show and just sort of be yourself? Like, how does that part work? Because it, like, you need, because it's a travelogue kind of show, you have to have these people not, how do I say this? They can't be stiff. You know what I mean? Like, they have to be loose. And so far, what I've seen, everybody's been pretty loose.
Yeah. I mean, that's just, I think some of that is, again, I've been on like a lot of commercial shoots, a lot of different sets. I've been on TV show stuff, and I just have an understanding of how to, I think, meet somebody in that moment a little bit when it's their first time or they're not as comfortable. And I think the more comfortable I can present and more casual and more conversational, it's just easy to have somebody meet me there. So I just try to do that. I try to make it as easy and as light. You know, honestly, is going to sound so, it's not really that different from how I played basketball. Like, that's who I was as a player, as a point guard. And I'm just kind of seeing that play out in other ways. But I do have to give a lot of credit to everyone who's been involved. There's been some people, trust me, in a really wonderful way, didn't need any help. They didn't need any help. Coach Ariema, Natasha Cloud, I already mentioned Jason, like zero help. They came in, they're like, all right, what do I need to do? Let's do it. So I got to give, they actually made me better in a way. So there's a lot of people on the show that made me better. But I think overall it is, once you start to see also that this isn't some serious interview, you know, this isn't some serious conversation we're trying to have, it loosens people up. Once they see like the gimmicky aspect of it, it loosens people up.
Interesting. Yeah. And Gino Auriemma remains the singular best coach that I've ever interviewed in terms of being quotable. It's just a remarkable sort of a gift. Yes, he has a talent, and that's one of them. Is there anyone who either could not do it schedule? Is there either a school or a person scheduling wise who did not work during this Sue's Places run that you would love to get if there's a second season or a third season? Like, who's sort of the white whale here that you that you need to get?
Yeah, a white whale. So a lot of the people or places literally that didn't work out was just, you know, based on schedule, based on all the logistics that thank God I did not have to be involved in. This is a logistical, like, I give credit where credit is due. Like Omaha Productions, like they hold, and Words and Pictures too, but they hold it down in the logistics. It's tough to say. We were in conversations with Candace Parker that it didn't work out. I'd love to get her on. We were talking to D Wade at one point. That would have been a lot of fun. God, those are the first two off the cuff. I'm trying to think. Oh, there was one with Flage down at LSU that didn't pan out, that I would have been really, I was like so excited to do that one. It just didn't work out. So yeah, that's definitely, by the way, that's another thing you have to kind of learn. You're like bobbing and weaving, and there's a lot of disappointment sometimes, and you kind of have to just keep it moving and put your, you know, your focus on the next one.
Are there plans to continue the Bird and Tarazi show at this year's Women's Final Four?
yes, there is. You know, we actually
what a pause, Sue.
No. It's only because we're not. There's no like official contracts. We take it one year at a time, and you know, we it always gets pulled together at the last minute. So I'm assuming it will again. I know Dee and I both want to do it, so it's not about that. You know, I don't want to. I believe we will be at the Final Four this year.
Okay. I appreciate and understood.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Okay, listen, I would be remiss not to ask you about Caitlin Clark. Caitlin Clark obviously is not the only incredibly talented women's college basketball player. But like the reality is, something about Caitlin Clark has captured the public's attention in a very, very unique way. So from your perspective, Sue, why has Caitlin Clark just sort of done that? Why has she captured the broader sports public's attention? What is it from your perspective?
I think it's a combination of things. I think the two that stand out the most, her long distance shooting. I think the one kind of like, I don't know, the one thing that cancels out people's obsession with dunking as it relates to the comparison between men's and women's basketball is deep shooting. It just is. But, you know, if we want to call it the logo three, let's just call it that. That, for whatever reason, I think, you know, men in particular, they don't hate on it. There's nothing to hate on because it is what it is, what it is. So I think that part of her game makes people, it just lends to people cheering for it. I think it's also captivating, right? The way that she plays with the long distance shooting, it's captivating. Everybody's interested in it. So that's one part of it. I think the other part is that women's basketball, women's sports in general, for sure, but women's basketball is just at this point where it's having a moment. And now Caitlin, like, honestly, based on just the year in which she's born, like, right, the fact that she's in college right now doing what she's doing, that moment needed somebody to, like, team up with it. So she is just uniquely positioned to take advantage of this moment. And I think her long distance shooting really, really is what's setting it off. Because there are other players that are exciting, right? There are other players right now in college basketball that you can feel excitement about. Juju is killing it. Juju at USC could arguably end up being, right, like, one of the best players ever. Like, I'm not saying that loosely, the way she is starting her career. And yet there's just something about Caitlin, and I think it's the deep shooting that just has captivated.
As somebody who had an incredible career in the WNBA, what is realistic for Caitlin Clark in her first year in the WNBA whenever that happens?
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be, first of all, my honest take on questions like this. I think it's wonderful that people are even talking about greatest of all times and having those debates, you know, and when you think, usually I don't like to compare to men's basketball, but think about the LeBron Michael Jordan debate. That thing is going to go on forever and ever and ever and ever and ever, and there's never going to be an answer. It's just going to be what people think and their opinions. And that's really what's going to happen, I think, in women's basketball when you start having these conversations too. So I just think it's wonderful we're having them. For Caitlin, you know, I think like any player, there is just a natural jump that you have to see what happens when they get there, right? From, you know, size, strength, you're now playing against adults, you know, women who this is their careers. But I do think she is, I do think she has a chance at having a lot of success early. And I think a lot of it comes down to her long distance shooting. I think that is her separator. Nobody, you're not really used to guarding people out there. And yes, there's been players who have had that kind of distance, but in the evolution of the game, the way that she has a green light for it is different. Diana Taurasi, who could easily do, and this is because they're both great, this is not a knock, she could be playing the way Caitlin is playing right now. She didn't have that green light. That's just not how it was back when she was in college. And even the last couple of years in the WNBA, I think in the WNBA, people aren't really used to guarding somebody that far out. I think if she does come out this year, if she does go number one, if she does end up on Indiana, that is a really good roster. She's going to be teaming up with, you know, just right out the gate, two really good post players that are going to complement her. So I think she has a chance to be successful. There is precedent for people coming out of college and coming in playing amazing. And they've all been Olympians, right? Candace Parker's, and the Breanna Stewart's, and the Diana Taurasi's, and Maya Moore's. Like, there is a precedent for that. But, you know, she still has to come in and do it. But I think she has every opportunity to do that. And then, of course, there'll be some growing pains, just like all of those players I just listed had.
Is it a realistic, like, assessment or prediction to say she can be an all-star in her first year?
I think if she plays up to her potential, yes, that's realistic. I don't think that's unrealistic. And by the way, that's not a knock on anyone in the WNBA. I think it's going to be hard, but I think she can do it. She's showing that she has the game, and then it'll be interesting. And that's what's so wonderful, again, about these conversations. You know, she could go in there and, you know, playing three games a week and the competition, and maybe she gets double team more. I have no idea. I'm making this up. Maybe that does get to her. Or she goes out there and she balls out. And that's the beauty of it. I'm tuning in for her first 10 games for sure. I can't wait to see how she does. And that's what the game needs, is all these conversations, no matter what side of the fence you fall on.
One of the things that I love, like, it's great to be a sports fan, is sort of when you play like fantasy, like, sort of questions, like, you know, what if Michael Jordan was drafted by the Lakers as opposed to the Bulls, et cetera. So I'm going to do a Sue Bird on this. Okay. Had you had the same decision as Caitlin Clark, would you have played year five at UConn?
You know, I only played 3 years at UConn, so.
That's correct. That's right.
I never even got
All right. So we'll call it year four. We'll call it year four.
Yeah. No, if I'm Caitlin Clark, I'm coming out of college. For sure.
Okay. So you, I'm saying you as Sue Bird in, what was my year? 2002, 2003. So you're coming out.
Well, wait, no. Okay. Sorry. I misunderstood. The year is 2002.
The year is when, I'll ask you about Caitlin too, but if I'm playing fantasy basketball here and I'm giving you the option, whatever. The NCAA just has a miraculous waiver, Sue. I can give you an extra year in college. You can play one more year. What do you do in your time?
Oh, God. In my time? This is tough. I think if I'm being honest, my 21-year-old self would have come back for a fourth year. I never would have come back for a fifth year. And in the same sentence, after I graduated, I only played 3 years. After I graduated, I came back that fall. So it's like the fall of 2002. And I hung out with the team and we party and I was like, I literally felt old. It was like, I knew in that moment, I was like, coming back for another year would have been terrible. So here we are.
It's like old school. You're like Will Ferrell, basically going back to college. The reason I thought you would have said yes is just because you get to play with Diana one more year. She's another year older and you take your run. Okay. But now to get back to Caitlin Clark. So in 2024, at the end of this year, if you're Caitlin Clark, you head to the WNBA?
See ya. Oh, absolutely. And by the way, in 2002, if we had NIL the way it is now and college basketball, just the moment was now, even after 3 years, I would have left. I was on a high. We just won. I was player of the year. Bye.
Interesting. Okay. That's really, really interesting. All right. One more on Caitlin, and then I want to finish up with you. How do you expect she gets marketed when she gets to the WNBA? And I wonder, just because you played in the league, like the reality is, like, it is to the league's benefit to market her because she is a massively known quantity. At the same time, right, you don't want to like over promote just one player because there's every player in the WNBA is sort of great. And so how do you expect that? How do they figure out how to navigate that? I guess I'm asking.
You know, interestingly, I think because the landscape has changed because of NIL, because all of the deals that, you know, Caitlin has now and is going to take with her, right? And actually, Aaliyah Boston has started talking about this recently. It's a really interesting thing because she also left a year on the table. It's not even the WNBA. I don't even know that the WNBA and their marketing is going to matter because now these players have their own brands. They really and truly do. So all the marketing is already happening. She's already a name. It's going to keep going. I think something that could really help women's basketball is building up rivalries, right? And to do that, I think you have to build up other players and other teams. So that I think is something that I would keep in the back of my head. Like, who's going to be, like, honestly, if I could have written a script of some sort a couple years ago, maybe Aaliyah and Caitlin come out of college at the same time, right? Because then you have this, like, for lack of a better, you have this like magic bird situation. That would have been, I think that could be cool and something that hopefully does start to build in the WNBA, like these rivalries. But the thing is, you can't force them. They have to kind of organically happen.
Exactly. That's why I kind of love Vegas Liberty, at least at the beginning of the year. Like, that was so exciting to sort of like read about. Here are these two teams. Everybody's sort of looking for them to meet. Obviously, whatever happens, happens, but that's really good for the league.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, I have like 10 more minutes, 12 more minutes worth of questions for you, if you're okay with that, and then we'll move on. Okay. And I appreciate you giving me all this time. So I referenced the interview that you and Megan did with Pablo Torre. Again, I can't recommend it enough. It's really, really interesting and honest. And so one of the things, and again, like Pablo, hopefully this is not too blunt, but I do want to ask you this because I find your career really interesting. You know, one of the things that you told Pablo was that in your 20s, you were told the only way that you could be marketed was to essentially be the straight girl next door. And like, I remember, because this was shortly after I profiled you at UConn, like seeing how in Seattle, this is kind of how you were marketed to the public, basically. And then you reflected how for 15 years, like, you didn't talk publicly about being gay and how you sort of felt about that missed time and how everybody does things on their own time. So I wanted to ask you this. Do you, in 2024, where do you think we are if an openly gay star basketball player in college sort of comes out and is a star, you know, whatever, the Caitlin Clark, Sue Bird kind of level, where would they be in your opinion in terms of endorsement potential versus someone who has marketed as the girl next door who's straight?
Oh, I think the answer to this question is not really about one versus the other. I think now, particularly in women's sports, we have recognized and seen that when you are authentically yourself, that is all that matters. And that is what brands will be drawn to. It's what fans are drawn to. I think it's why there have been a lot of eyeballs on the WNBA in the last couple of years, is that. So whether you're straight, gay, it doesn't matter, right? Whether you, I don't know, you're into cars, you're into shoes, I don't know, I'm making stuff up. It doesn't matter as long as you're authentically yourself. And that really is wonderful. I think we still have a long way to go in terms of, you know, sexual orientation and that conversation. Honestly, in terms of race and how that is playing out in women's sports, there's a conversation there. There's a long way to go. But right now we're finally seeing being your authentic self, which is something that I think men have been allowed and afforded for a very long time to be themselves. We're seeing that now. It doesn't impact what happens in terms of your, you know, endorsements. But again, that's not to say race doesn't play a role and there's impact there. There's still other places to go. But like I said, it's almost what we were talking about earlier. We're seeing movement in a good direction, but we still have to, you know, keep pushing.
Do you think that maybe it's not as much for the women's game, but do you think star male basketball players in college or maybe star basketball players in high school who are gay are, do you think they're still told not to come out publicly because of what some agent might think in terms of marketing dollars are? I agree with you on the women's game. I wonder how you see it from the men's side.
I could only imagine it would be really scary for a male college athlete to come out. I can only imagine how scary that would feel, truly. Both, like, forget marketing. What about, like, your life? Like, literally living your life. So, yeah, I don't know that I have a definitive answer outside of, I would imagine it would feel like impossible to do that for a male college athlete, just given how we speak about it for men, given that there aren't that, you know, there aren't that many male athletes who have come out as active players, period. That would be tough. That'd be tough. But, you know, I would love to see it. I would love to see it.
I hope if we have this conversation 10 years from now that both of our answers would change in terms of how difficult that might be. And that's something, you know, we'll see. You had a fascinating, in my opinion, career away from the United States when you played abroad, including playing in Russia, which I think I've told you this, that, like, that should have been its own documentary, if not its own movie, just like the great players who played in Russia during your time. I remember speaking with you in the past. You always spoke incredibly about that experience. You spoke incredibly about Russia and Moscow as a city. I wonder, I don't know how to ask this. Is it an odd feeling now, given where the United States relationship is with Russia, especially in the post-Brittany Griner world? Because, you know, you really had a good experience there. I think I'm characterizing that correctly.
Is it an odd experience? Yeah, it is a little odd. I think just given where the relations are, you know, here was a place. And you're right. I do have a lot of wonderful memories. I think it was a really wonderful experience for me in my, you know, I was there from age, give or take, like 24 or 5 to 34 or 5, somewhere in there. Those are really formidable years. And here I was exposed to a different culture. And I really think it helped shape who I am today. So yeah, the fact that, you know, the relationship between our countries is what it is interesting for me, but at the same time, like, I'm very much like, how do I want to say that? I was like pro-American. I don't know. Like, I'm very much like, I don't agree with pretty much everything that's happening over there. Obviously with BG's scenario, that was incredibly sad and awful for so many reasons. And I think, yeah, it does leave you with like a torn feeling. And I think that feeling, right, where like multiple things can be true, I feel like that's something we don't talk a lot about in our country. Like I can feel a way about Russia right now and also have good memories from there, and both things are true. And that's kind of all of our, yeah, it's like all of our existences if we really think about it in regards to a lot of different topics.
100%. You know, I'm the rare American. I've been to Moscow and been to Sochi, and talking to people in Moscow, like, it was a great experience. Like, you learn that like people are not so different. They sort of just want the same stuff. They want to like be happy. They want peace and stuff. But like you, I have massive, like, I cannot tell you how much I sort of dislike the current Russian government now and what's going on. So I do understand where you're coming from, and you had a much, you know, you literally lived there and played there. So I appreciate you answering that.
It's also it's interesting, just like something to think about. It's like people are not their governments and vice versa. They agree with some, they disagree with others. And I think that's something as an American, we can also relate to. So, you know, to your point, like, I have friends that are Russian, right? Are they their government? It's like, so that's kind of another thing to think about.
Yeah, we live in like, I mean, I live in Canada, Sue, so what am I talking about? But we, as both of us are Americans, like, the tribalism that now exists in the United States is something I never thought I would see in my lifetime. We'll have to do that in another podcast. So.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, not on this one. All right. Last three. Now that you have a little bit of separation, a year and a half from it, what are your thoughts on sort of how your last year went in terms of like sort of a farewell tour? And do you have any thoughts as to, I mean, I guess especially like somebody like Diana or somebody who's closer to the end than the beginning. Like, did you learn anything about like sort of what works best in a final season?
So when I look back, I still have fond memories. I wouldn't change a thing. I'm so glad I announced when I announced and I got to experience the farewell tour. And I was actually anti that at one point, right?
I
probably
remember.
Like a couple years prior. Yeah. So that was, you know, that was interesting for me to experience it in that way. My only regret is how the season ended because we lost, but otherwise, otherwise, no, I couldn't. I mean, I'm whoever this applies to, I could not recommend it more. Like, I tell Diana, I'm like, I cannot recommend this enough. If I talk to LeBron right now, I'd be like, bro, I cannot recommend this enough, because what I realized is a couple things. One, it's just as much about the fans and them being able to say goodbye to you. And I always thought of it like, oh, I don't know if I want this attention. It's like, you have to almost see outside yourself and understand that this is going to be meaningful for so many people. The second thing I will say, it can be a lot. It can be a lot, but I just think the pros outweigh the cons. But yeah, and then I'll finish with, it is each individual's choice, and you have to be up for it or game for it. I would just always argue there might be things you personally gain, or things you learn about yourself, about your career, about your relationship with the fans that you probably didn't know without this experience. So that's really my take after going through it. But I totally, it's not, if somebody wants to just dip and say bye without it, I get that too. I really do. I really think it's such a unique decision, and it really is unique to the person.
Yeah. By the way, so sports writers do not get a farewell tour. It's just basically goodbye. Yeah. Thank you very much. Be well. All right. Here are the final two. You're going to hate me for this, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
Okay.
You know how I feel about Gino Auriemma. It was awesome to cover women's basketball as long as I did at Sports Illustrated. He was a great coach. That said, like, he's not going to coach forever. I hate that asking this, but I'm going to. If I gave you the athletic director job, do you have someone who you think would be a good replacement for Gina?
No, I don't. I mean, who wants that job? Let's be honest. That's a toughie.
Once upon a time, though, you were interested in coaching. Maybe you still are, but that was interest to you. I remember that. You're done with that now. Okay.
Yeah. At least for right now. No, I think that is just it'd be big shoes to fill and really hard to take that spot. I think there are definitely people who can do it. So it's not to say that it's impossible, but I don't know. For me personally, I'm like, I don't want that job. But like, I wouldn't. I'm not trying to take South Carolina after Dawn. I'm not trying to take the San Antonio Spurs after Pop. Like, you know what I mean? Those are just difficult jobs.
Tennessee after Summit, UCLA after Wooden. Yeah. You never want I mean, it's the old cliche. You want to be the person who replaces the person who replaced the person. That's what. 100%. Yeah, I'm with you. All right.
I think it's no different here. No different here.
You didn't give us names, but you answered it in a typical diplomatic Sue Bird way, and I have to respect that.
Diana Taurasi, D should do it.
Ooh, I love that. That would be. Would she be successful, or would it be like a Magic Johnson? I can't take these players. Not as good as me. I got to quit.
She would never do it. That's why I'm putting her up for it.
All right, last one. Your foray into media has been, at least initially, very successful. I know there's a long way to go when it comes to A Touch More and Together. If I was to talk to you 5 years from today, so we'd be doing this in 2024, where do you hope these companies are as media initiatives?
Yeah, I hope that, you know, whether it's Together, A Touch More, both of them really, I hope they're starting to forge a path, and I hope they just continue to do that. And again, really show or put a spotlight on the stories that we don't always get to see, right? The stories we don't get to see about women, the stories we don't get to see about women of color, you know, all the communities that just never get their stories told. I hope we forge a path in such a way where there are other companies that we are quote unquote competing with. I think that to me is really a sign of growth. It means there's so many stories out there. There's just so many. I mean, there's so many, but one company can't cover them all. And I would just love to see in 5 years that there's more production companies, whether led by women of color, or, you know, athletes. I just think that would be so wonderful to see more and more of that.
I mean, you know this already, Sue. Women's sports is the most underrepresented silo in the sports world that exists when it comes to sports documentaries. The amount of stories that have not been told and that exist could keep a company in business for 100 years. And so I think, you know, I've written this, I think you guys are on the cusp of what's sort of next or what's now. And I have no doubt that, like, you're going to find success here. Sue, you know this, I have immense respect for how you've just sort of conducted yourself as a very, very high profile athlete in the United States, and it was very cool just to be able to see you way back when at the beginning. Before I get you out of here, let's promote what is going on with Sue Bird. So check out Sue's Places. That's on ESPN Plus. If you watch any college basketball game, usually it's on the bottom line scroll, so she's getting some pretty good publicity for that. And that's an original series between Omaha Productions and Word and Pictures. There's 10 episodes you'll be able to stream on that. Sue also has now multiple production companies. A Touch More with her fiance Megan Rapinoe, and then Together, which is a media and commerce company with Alex Morgan, Chloe Kim, and Simone Manuel. You can check all that stuff out online, and there's been a lot written about that. Sue, listen, you were incredibly generous with your time. I cannot thank you enough. I only wish you the best, and thank you so much for joining me today on the Sports Media Podcast.
Thanks for having me. Always fun.
All right, back in the studio. My thanks to Sue Bird, who was tremendous, unsurprisingly. Head to the archives page. Hopefully there's things that you will appreciate and like. Last podcast, Kristen Lapis, one of the great sports documentary filmmakers right now out there, who just did a big documentary on Giannis for Amazon. And we talked about how that documentary came together. Alex Sherman of CNBC on what is going on with all the different sort of media stories that exist right now. Kenny Smith of TNT, Noah Eagle of NBC, and he was on to talk about calling the Super Bowl for Nickelodeon. All sorts of Super Bowl content on this podcast prior to that game. Check that out. Again, if you like this stuff, please leave us a 5-star review and a nice note. That is how this podcast continues. Want to thank Patrick Antonetti for all his hard work. Thank you to everybody at Odyssey for their support, and thank you for listening. We'll see you soon on the Sports Media Podcast.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk.
No.
You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, oh, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.